Welcome to the Working Dog Depot podcast with your hosts, Rich Harden and Howard Young.
Howard Young, how are you, sir?
Doing very well. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Kind of, I'm coming down with something, a little hoarse tonight.
Well, I've been battling allergy symptoms on and off. Like one day it'll be really bad. The next day I'm okay. And I just can't, it's probably training in some of these old school buildings that are just full of black mold. It's probably what it is.
Yeah, that's healthy for sure.
For sure. Absolutely. And they haven't been cleaned in years.
Well, the looking at training places over, you know, so hard to find training locations that you can go in and let a dog run through that, you know, you got to take what you can take.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. So this evening we have a gentleman who is fairly well known. I would say that in this community, people have certainly heard his name. He's also has a book that's come out recently called The Underdogs, Conquering Life with Man's Best Friend and SEAL Team ... So tonight it's our honor to have Benny Olson with us.
Thanks for having me, Howard and Rich.
Welcome to the show, man. Thanks for taking your time. We appreciate you.
You are a guest that I've wanted to have had on for a long time. So I'm glad we could actually make it happen. You have a fascinating story. And bear in mind, I'd say, as we were just talking, I think most of our listeners are canine handlers. And I think those are the kinds of things that they're really going to be interested in. What was life like prior to your mission, and what did that look like? And I've heard you on other podcasts, and I think whatever you have to tell us is just going to be fantastic.
Thanks. I look forward to it.
Well, I always ask my question, what got you into dogs?
What got me into dogs? I was not a dog owner growing up. I mean, we had dogs, but they were like inherited. Like a family member would come on vacation and they would lose their dog and then they would leave. And it was like, now we have this poodle. We had a Dalmatian growing up, and that was just a pain in the ass. Like, I haven't seen a Dalmatian in years, keep in mind. But back then, because of that movie, they'd come out, so we'd gotten one. Just not a great dog, kind of aggressive. And, man, I didn't join the Navy to go work military dogs. I didn't even really know much about them, even in the police world. I was an explorer when I was young, and I guess it never really crossed my mind to work with them. I think the first time that I decided that that's something I wanted to do was when I was in Bahrain. They were sweeping these buses, and I've said this a lot of times before, but seeing the handlers interact with the dogs was one thing, but knowing that like those dogs were the first line of defense for the kids that were getting ready to get on these buses to be taken to school was like the thing that did it for me. It seems kind of cliche, but like you hear the whole sheepdog thing. And I think, you know, just wanting to serve and then also take it a step further, the dogs really enabled me to take it, you know, that one step further.
So that's a different process then. So you were already in the Navy? Was you
Yeah, I was a Navy Master at Arms, which is considered, it's similar to a military police officer. It's the exact same thing, just a different kind of title for the Navy. And I actually only wanted to go in and do my 4 or 5 years and get out and then go be a police officer back in Minnesota, because they had a rule where you could get out of the military if you served in that capacity and apply for reciprocity. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go back to Minnesota, but that certainly did not happen.
So what were you doing when the dog opportunities began to present themselves?
I was in, like I said, I was in Bahrain. I was standing the gates like 12 hours a day. I was just a straight stick. Like they flew us over there. I actually flew over there on my 19th birthday, December 30th. They put us up in these Gucci hotels over there because it's here in the Middle East. And the military over there really didn't have barracks to house you. They only had so much room. And they had beefed up their master at arms rating, and they were sending them all to Bahrain, majority of them there. So I was doing force protection. I was standing the gates 12 hours, and that's pretty much it, man. I was like a glorified security guard, just, you know, checking IDs, and that was it. I mean, it wasn't really exciting. I mean, it was 12 hours a day of standing gates.
So the opportunity to work a dog, how did that present itself?
Well, So I had to actually take initiative on my own. Mm-hmm. I had to go over to the dog kennel. I actually had to first go to my chief in the patrol section and say, hey, I want to go volunteer on my off time. And we were already working port and starboard. So, you know, you work 12 hours and then it takes you an hour to get home. And then, you know, by the time you get to sleep, you only have about 8 hours till your next shift. And he said, as long as it doesn't affect your time over in patrols, you can go do whatever you want. So I went over there and, you know, they're kind of like, yeah, right. Like, you know, I was an E3, so very low ranking in the military. And to be a dog handler back in the day, you had to be an E5. So you had to have at least 4 or 5 years in the military. And then, you know, so here I was just like, hey, I want to volunteer my time. I really don't care if I get to go to school or not. I just want to come and help. And so that's where, you know, I got to go in the kennel and, you know, they would put me in the bite suit, and just send me out into a field or a building. And I'd be a bite dummy, which is hindsight, like I've said before, is not the smartest thing to do, right? Like sending a new guy on a 100-yard bite. You know, it's one bad for the person. It's also, it's detrimental to the dog too. I mean, you could really mess up a dog or possibly hurt it pretty bad. So I spent my time just volunteering and just trying to get my foot in the door. I would say it took me 3 solid months, which was kind of unheard of. And then they finally said, hey, we'll take you. And then they pulled me out of patrols, put me kennel support full time. And then, I went to dog school. Damn, I want to say it was like May or June. I showed up down to Lackland Air Force Base in my desert, my DCU, my desert camis, and you know, started doing that process there. That was a whole different world.
Well, what was dog school like back then in Lackland?
I'm sure it's similar to how it is now. I mean, I was an E3, like I said, I was very junior, so they have the MA school, the Master at Arms school is down there as well. So I don't think they were used to seeing like somebody my age come through there. I mean, there was definitely a lot of, I would just call them haters. I mean, it is what it is. Like there were people there that definitely wanted to make my time harder. Certainly, you know, and I respect that. I actually respect that because it actually shows, you know, how much you actually want it. Other people might disagree and say it's like hazing and whatnot, but I don't know. I enjoyed it. And then, you know, being there, I would say the difficulty of it wasn't really hard. The dogs were difficult. Like the dogs, like, cause the dogs there are most of them at that time, and I'm sure it's still the same way, are dogs that cannot be adopted out, or they failed at some aspect in the military and they made great training aids. You know, we get dogs that went out the bite, you know, and they're over in the patrol section and you're trying your damnedest to get a dog to just do an out. And, so you have to show the different correction procedures to do that. I mean, obedience, you know, it served its purpose, right? Like it allowed you to, because if they give you a dog that knows how to do everything, like I get that, that's one thing, but being able to work through some of those issues is another.
Right. Sure.
So you finished dog school. What's the first assignment look like?
I go back to Bahrain. So I went back to Bahrain. I had to owe them, an extra 2 years. So I had to obligate, basically I wouldn't go to another military base. I wouldn't be able to transfer since Bahrain basically funded me to go to dog school. And in Bahrain, I worked, 3 dogs. The first dog they put me on as a new handler, they put me on a dog that I would agree with for every, you know, new handler. I think it's is a veteran dog that basically did everything for me. I mean, I could watch the dog do detection and see like a really nice change of behavior. I could, and then be able to start reading dogs and whatnot. I think it was just a great setup for me. So that dog was named Bren. He was an all black shepherd. And, you know, I got difficult dogs as I went, but obviously my skills got better. I mean, what you guys know, I mean, it's, you guys been in this long enough to, you know, see that, you know, sometimes it's best to have, you know, some handlers need a dog that kind of can show them, you know, how to work.
That's a great way to put it. That's right. Let me break you in here.
So our last guest had, he has a lot of interesting little sayings. He said that a perfect dog doesn't teach you anything. It's just, you're just lucky. And most people don't have a lot of luck.
Yeah, no, no. And to be honest with you, that's why I kind of enjoyed working in the pet world, even though I was talking to you before. In the pet world, man, it seems like, I mean, most dogs are similar in the problems that they have, but you'll get dogs, like every few dogs that just challenge you, and it requires you to be better. It requires your trainers, the people that are working for you, to be better and really realize that not one system kind of works for every dog. I believe that.
Yeah. Oh, wholeheartedly, I couldn't agree more. And, the difficult dogs teach you how to be a dog trainer. So just kind of reviewing your history here, you get your first dog, you're still in Bahrain, you finish up there. So how did you transition to where you ended up?
Hey, folks, we're proud to have Hold the Line Canine Conference as a supporter and sponsor of the Working Dog Depot podcast. Joe Lukowski and staff are already securing vendors and presenters for the seminar in April. That's April 9th, 10th, and 11th in a brand new location. That's right, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We are especially excited about that. It's going to cut our travel time in half, and there's nothing like being in the Carolinas in early April. And that's Hold the Line Canine Conference. We're very much looking forward to being there and hope to see you all there. Thank you.
So I actually was, I was in Bahrain for 2.5 years, and then I had about a year and a half left on my contract, and I was going to get out because I was bored as hell. Like, I wasn't going to Iraq or I wasn't going to Afghanistan. I wasn't doing any of that. So I decided to go to Kingsville, Texas, which is a small military base. That's where I met my wife. So it worked out to be a great thing. Ended up, they paired me with a dog there that was basically like my first dog, kind of knew how to do everything. And I was like, this is not going to work. I mean, if this is not going to challenge me, then, you know, I don't want to do it no more. You know what I mean? Like, it just, I'm one of those people that, like, I constantly want to be challenged in life. And I think that's maybe drives my wife nuts, but, you know, what else can I do? And so while I was there, I started volunteering with the Texas State Patrol, and I was at Alabama State Patrol. I applied to them. I actually got the call from Alabama 2 weeks after I went and screened at Damneck at Naval Special Warfare Development Group. I got selected to go there. And so I turned down all the other offers that I'd gotten to go be a state trooper, because obviously, I mean, the opportunity to go there presented itself, and that in itself was a challenge, because I had just arrived to Kingsville, Texas, and basically said, I don't want to be here no more. And my kennel master there, actually, she saved me. I mean, she really vouched for me and said, hey, we don't need this guy. Let him go there. This will be better for his career. And so I went up there and screened for their program at Naval Special Warfare Development Group, and then ultimately was selected to go be a dog handler for them.
Did you have any idea what you were getting into?
No, I honestly, I did. I swear to God, like, I thought it was like training dogs for the SEALs, and I thought maybe we might deploy. But the shit, like the stuff that we went and did, I just would never have expected it. Like doing, you know, OTBs, like coming on the beach out of a little boat, and swimming in with a dog, and you know, we did some other thing, you know, in helicopters, and you know, I never got my wings, you know, jump out of planes and whatnot, but I got tandem out of a plane. And to see like the, you know, be doing that stuff at night, and, you know, we'd go do training in the mountains. I mean, just this, all the stuff that we went and did was, it just seems like every time we went and did something new, it was like a, you know, like sucking out of a fire hose, you know, you're just, and then you're in awe of what you're doing, and you're like, can I really do this? You know, you're questioning yourself a little bit, you know, cause I wasn't a Navy SEAL. I was just Benito Olson, a skinny 140 pound, you know, kid, you know, it's like 20 years old, you know, doing that. So it was very eye opening.
Wow. What a very cool experience.
Yeah, so, it was it was interesting. Yeah.
So you ended up with a third dog. Is that correct?
A third dog. So are you talking about in Bahrain, or are you talking about it at Dev Group, or are you talking about it in Kingsville?
Just in general, you've mentioned two dogs.
Oh. Man, if we went back to Bahrain, I had three dogs there. I had that shepherd that I talked to you about that was pretty much push button. The second dog I got was a flat-coated retriever that wanted to, you know, pretty aggressive, like would, you know, if anybody touched his ass, would bite him. not me, of course. But again, that stems from you know, somebody saw it and it happened and they think it would be cool to fuck with a dog. And then over time it now becomes a thing. And then my third dog there was actually a green dog out of Lackland, Leo, who was a brand new Malinois, dual purpose, just a badass. Could teach him anything. Like I taught him to do a nice bark and hold where he'd actually jump, bark in the guy's face, which in hindsight was probably not a great idea, but we did stupid shit back then and we thought it was cool. And, you know, taught him other things like sit pretty, you know, stupid stuff like that. And I went to Kingsville and I had one dog there before I left. I mean, I was only there like 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Naval Special Warfare Development Group. And then while I was there, I worked 5 dogs.
Oh, wow.
So it was one of those things though, like it was the opposite, right? Like now I was a seasoned handler and it's like, I wanted to work like the new dogs, like take a new dog out on target, get him ready, get him good to go on his first appointment and then hand him off to somebody else. You know, we talked about Jeff. I know, you know, Jeff, yeah. Rich and Jeff, when I got to Damneck, he was the trainer for Digo, who was the first dog I took. And Digo was not like a push button dog by any means. Like, in a certain aspect, he was like, you could send him into a building and he's going to fuck up whoever's in there. But on the same token, being able to control him was just completely different. Like he got kicked out of his first squadron that he was with because he, you know, was biting good guys, biting the handler, you know, biting everybody. And so I actually got a chance to, you know, fix him and take him out. But yeah, it was a lot of dogs for sure.
Yeah.
I guess when you first got there, how did they pair up? How did they pair you with dogs? And what was the process like of getting a dog and then deploying? Or was it just a constant changeover?
Yes. Yeah. So they don't, and again, this was 12 years ago. So I don't know why they'd give a shit, but you know, 12 years ago when you'd get there, you'd get put through a support course, you know, so you knew how to shoot, you knew how to do medical care, you knew how to do comms, all of the basic shit that you would do on target. You needed to know how to do that first before you put your hands on a dog. So they shoved me in one of those courses and I did that for 4 months. You know, you pretty much get beat by, you know, 2 retired Navy SEALs, at least it was for me, and then 2 active duty SEALs that were in charge of the program. And they basically make sure that you're not going to quit. And then once you get through that, so that's about 3 months of doing that, and then you get assigned a dog. It just so happened that I got assigned Digo because he failed out of another squadron. And then another handler had a dog fail out of the squadron I was got assigned to. And so it was like a perfect setup for me. I only had about 6 months to get ready to deploy, though. So I passed that support course in July and I actually went over to Iraq in January.
Okay.
So in that time frame, not only did I have to figure out how to work with a dog, like just train with a dog. Like, you know, again, I was paired with Jeff for the most part and, you know, doing building searches and stuff like that, you know, seeing how the dog works. But then I also had to take that dog and go and implement myself into the team. So not only are we doing our regular training, but we're also having to do extra training, you know, for myself and for the dog to make sure that we, you know, I know what I'm doing. It was literally, I mean, like when I say it was sucking through a fire hose, I mean, that's what it felt like the whole time. And, you know, those guys, you know, their number one goal is to clear the house and do all of that. You know, here I got this animal attached to me and I'm trying to figure out what they're comfortable with. And it turns out the squadron I was with, not only the squadron I was with, but the troop that I was paired with inside the squadron, they loved the dog. I mean, they valued the dog. And I think that's what made me really successful. My first deployment, even though I got blown up and, you know, broke my legs, the ops that I went on before that, I think that's what made me successful is because they actually wanted the dog to be there and we actually used them, you know, how you should.
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit. You know, that's, you know, I've always said that, you know, dogs are not a replacement for tactics. They're our enhancement for our tactics. And so how did they like to use the dog to deploy? How did that enhance what they were doing?
So, you know, Iraq was interesting. Like we could have barricaded shooters. We could have houseborne IEDs, all of that. So when we were doing the training leading up to, you know, they would always want to send the dog in first, let the dog search and see if it could find anything. as soon as it came out, then they would make entry, and then we would send the dog in right after, let the dog go again. Squirters, obviously, those are people, you know, I label in my book, people basically run away from the target. So they loved using the dog for that because that meant that they didn't have to go chase them as far, you know. Yeah, it was, yeah, no, I mean, it worked out. And I think it was like a kind of almost like a safety net for them. Like it gave, because again, when you're dealing with barricaded shooters, man, like those guys, you know, we ran into an incident, you know, over in Iraq where there was three or four of them in a room and, you know, ended up getting a couple of our guys. But, you know, barricaded shooters are, you know, a prime example why dogs are a great tool, is because they'll hide behind, you know, hidden walls and, you know, or false walls and all of that. And so that's really what we used our dogs for. We would do call outs on the building. So especially in Iraq, you know, we would get up to the wall and we would say, hey, you have the interpreter basically say, hey, you're surrounded. We're going to send the dog in if you, you know, you don't come out. And of course people would come out, but then there were people that would stay in and send the dog in with a camera and, you know, you could watch them search. And, you know, it was just a safety net, I think. And a lot of guys respected that.
Do you ever recall a time where you were utilizing a dog that was unproven up until that moment?
Well, I mean, pretty much all of the green dogs that we take overseas, they're pretty much unproven. I mean, we could put a decoy in an all leather suit or an all Kevlar suit, like a hidden suit.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you just don't know. Like,
true, it's still just it's equipment.
Yeah, it's equipment. And like we would have people that would say, well, if you put them in a muzzle and they act like they want to, you know, eat through the muzzle. But man, a muzzle is just another game. Like I've seen dogs that were badasses in the muzzle. They wouldn't bite to save their life. But then I've seen dogs that were terrible in a muzzle. And once they're out of that muzzle, they know.
Right.
Like they know they can't. And it's just, so yeah, I mean, Digo was a proven dog. Rex, the dog that I talk about in my book that I had a horrible night with him. He bit like two assaulters on one of these missions. He was like a loose cannon. He went to a police department because the police department that he went to didn't work with a SWAT team or anything like that. So really, like if they sent a dog into a building, it's like anybody who's inside that building's fair game. And it worked out really well for him. Like he actually did very, very well. And but Tego was another dog I took over there. He was unproven, but man, like I put him on a guy in a doorway that was, I think he was dead already. And Tego went and latched onto him, no problem, shook him around a little bit and then let go. But yeah, that's the problem that you're dealing with when you get over. And I don't know how police officers, I mean, Rex.
Well, the same questions in their minds as well. And the same dilemmas. And for us, we talk a lot about creating pictures for the dogs in terms of our training.
Yeah. You know,
and hope that the dog generalizes enough to figure the situation out. But
yeah, it's weird. You know, you never know until they actually like, and I've had dogs that I've sent on real bites and, you know, they've gotten the clothing and that was enough to like actually get them to like it to click and then them to re-engage onto the arm. We would train with, you know, we buy up a bunch of clothing from Iraq or Afghanistan, wherever they get the shit, and send it back home, you know, train the, you know, do live role players in it and do the muzzle work and you put it up, wrap it, you know, put it on the suit, put it on the hidden. I mean, we would try to do everything we could. And I think at one point they brought in an arm that like felt like flesh. And when it bit, it actually squirted out like fake blood or whatever. I don't know, man, it was, but yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, we would put dogs on those bite tables. I don't know, what is that what they call them? Aggression tables?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so about waist high. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, if the dog really wanted it, like you could tell like he wanted it. And so I would say that was our best, between that and the muzzle and, you know, just doing regular training. I think we could kind of have an idea if they were good or not.
Right.
Good to go.
What about the tempo? I mean, we talking about lots and lots of people that possibly be apprehended on a mission?
Well, I mean, apprehended or killed, I mean, two different things, but like, I wouldn't get a bite. Are you talking about like how the frequency of bites?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I've got, I only talk like really about several stories I think I've outlined of, and then, but there was more bites. They weren't always as cool. Like the mission leading up to it wasn't as cool, or what we did wasn't cool, because like at the end of the day, you'd send a dog into a building and he'd get a bite, and it, I don't know. Some of them were cooler than others. Every night though, the dog would get used. So like that was a thing. Like we never had to worry about whether or not, like there was always an opportunity to get a bite. And, you know, because we're overseas, you know, if somebody, you know, if we're engaging an enemy combatant and they're, you know, laying in the doorway, there's a bite right there. Like it's just, and that's a good first. I mean, you can really see if a dog's, you know, engage, you know, we would send a dog in to see if they were playing possum, and you get a chance to see if the dog would actually engage. So it worked. Mm-hmm. Op tempo wise, we would go out every other night, every two nights. I mean, we're going out a lot though, you know, and that's stressful in itself. You know, you're going out after high value targets.
And what was the length of your deployments there?
Hey folks, we're excited to tell you about one of our new sponsors. That's Ray Allen Manufacturing. Ray Allen has been making canine related products since 1948. Many of you recognize the name Ray Allen with being synonymous with quality canine gear. Both Rich and I have been ordering equipment from them for years. My now adult sons have shared with me that some of their childhood memories involve seeing Ray Allen catalogs at home. That's right, folks, catalogs that came in the mail before the internet. Over the past few years, we've gotten to know some of the faces behind the scenes and have come to appreciate them for who they are. We've also enjoyed the banter back and forth. I've been the subject of at least one prank. It's relationships like these that are icing on top of the cake when it comes to doing business with a company. When searching for canine-related gear, seek out a trusted name in the industry. That's Ray Allen Manufacturing. For a 10% discount, use the WDD10 discount code. Thank you.
So my deployment to Iraq was cut short because I had that house born ID. But that was going to be a four-month deployment, and my son was actually going to be born during that deployment. I actually wasn't supposed to make it back to see him be born. The deployments in Afghanistan, at one point they were like 6 months long for these guys, and then they put them down to four, and then I think at three. But in Afghanistan, it was four-month deployments. So yeah, it was pretty, I mean, you're only there for 4 months, but you're hitting it every other night, or as much as they want to send you out.
Well, that is a crazy tempo.
Especially when you know, you're going to be used every night. I mean, that's one thing, cool thing about the dog is like, you knew you were going to be a part of the action in some way or another.
Right. Well, I guess, Howard, do you have any other questions before we lead up to the, to your incident there? You've mentioned it a couple of times with your house-born IED.
I mean, I think I've talked about it before, you know, so hopefully you got some new listeners, but you know, you talked about an unproven dog before. We had a dog that unfortunately missed a couple barricaded shooters, a couple nights before, and we lost a couple guys. And then the focus turned to just, okay, we're going to use Digo because he's a badass. Like he's fucking destroyed some people on that deployment. And, we're getting ready to go out. We're going to go out in Strikers. So it's these eight-wheeled vehicles. And they're going to drive us right out of the base in Iraq to Baqaba, Iraq. So it's normally in the history of that war, it's, you know, safe haven for Al-Qaeda and terrorists and whatnot. And the call that night was take those things out so we can only take one dog. I happen to be the handler. I think if it would have been the other way around, they would have taken the SEAL handler because, you know, I was just an MA, but because I was attached to Digo, they were like, yeah, we're taking Digo. They knew Digo would go deep too. Like he didn't go just, I'm sure you guys have seen it, but some dogs go like shallow into a room and then they come right back out. Digo was very methodical. He would search deep and he'd go upstairs, go high. I mean, sometimes he wouldn't come out. I'd have to call him out. And, so I put a muzzle on him. We pull up to the city. We go to our vehicle drop off point, and then we start doing our patrol into the city. It was about, I don't know, probably five or six blocks. We weren't very far. You could hear AK fire in the background. As we're walking through, I get, you know, I have a couple bottles of like meat and food in my pockets, and I have, they're like water bottles because there's not wild dogs, but stray dogs everywhere. and they tried coming up to Diego, and I chucked out these bottles and of course got the dogs to get away. And we get up to the building and they decide that they're going to do a call out on the building. And so basically that's just, they're going to give the opportunity to all the occupants to come out, you know, as safe for them and also safe for us. And so they start calling all these people out. Women come out first with the kids. They end up dropping a couple people in the doorway. I don't know if it was a woman and a man, but they both had AKs, immediately got dropped in the doorway. And then we go to one of the other women and we say, hey, go in there and tear down all the, because they use these sheets for doorways and whatnot. And a dog will go through it. But just to make it easier on the dog, because it's completely pitch black in there and they can't see, they're using their noses. I mean, I know they can see something, but not nearly as much. So she goes in there, tears everything down. She says there's still one guy in there. And I believe our sniper told us, because he was on the one of the adjacent roofs, he said that through his thermal imaging, he could see a silhouette in there. So we kind of knew that somebody was in there. They say it's dog up over the radio. I get next to the team leader and I kneel down and I say, dog up. I, you know, just acknowledge that I'm there. And he said, send it. So I unclicked him. Diego was a cheap ass. Like Diego would go for dead prey all day long because it was an easy bite for him. And so he went right to the doorway where I sent him, engaged both people in the doorway. They're both dead. And if they weren't dead, you would know pretty quickly because he had a pretty nasty bite. So much of a nasty bite that once somebody started screaming, he would navigate towards their head. And I don't know if it was just because of the noise and it just did something to him inside that he navigated, you know, to the source of the noise. Cause he had, you know, multiple head bites and throat bites and stuff like that. So anyways, he engaged those two people. I pulled them off or didn't pull them off. I called them back. We haven't made entry yet into the courtyard. And I told the team leader, hey, we're going to have to get closer to send him in, you know, and at that point, I wish, you know, looking back, I could have gotten him to get in past the dead bodies. You know, again, that's one thing in training that I think training a dog to get past the first decoy and then moving on to the next, I don't know how you do that in real life. Because in real life, it just, everything's different for whatever reason. It's just different. And so team leader says, all right, we're going to move up to the building. We move up to the building and there's a big bay window. And I was like, hey, I'm going to send Diego through the window instead of the doorway, because one, there were like three guys right near the doorway that were stacked up and there was like no room for me. So I went and knelt down in front of the window and they said, hey, we're going to put a frag into the room to soften it up for the dog. Cause we never sent the dog in. Like if we knew that there was a barricaded shooter, we're not just sending the dog in. Like that's just a suicide mission that, I mean, it's just unfair to the animal. And so chucked a grenade in the room. I hear the grenade go off very briefly, you know, cause you just know. So I peer my head up right after it goes off and I can feel like this back pressure coming back at me. And I've never felt that before. Like I've been on a lot of breaches, like right at the doorway, like where they, and you know what that feels like, but what this was different. And then everything was black. So the guy inside after the first grenade went off, detonated the building. And it basically, I got pictures of it. It sent the building down. And our EOD guy, Louis Affront, he was killed instantly because he was the building, how it came down, just kind of laid on top of him. And, you know, part of me, you know, looking back, I wish I could have gotten the dog in there because I don't think we would have went up that nearly as far had I could have. But, you know, so that was the first thing that happened. Multiple guys got thrown back. I mean, we had guys that were up on the compound wall that got chucked, you know, backwards off their ladders. And last thing I remember, I was kneeling right next to an assaulter with my dog. And then when I woke up, like I couldn't move anything and everything was black. And, you know, I talk about, you know, a Jesus moment in my book. Won't go into that, but like truly, you know, believe that God was there on my side. And, you know, it's everything's black. And I honestly thought that like I was buried alive, but I didn't remember I was in Iraq. So I thought like I was in like a coffin or something. I couldn't move. And then I started hearing muffling voices and then I remembered where I was. And then I was like, oh shit, where's my dog? And so Digo at the time, he was connected to me by a 3-foot tether, is a 1-inch nylon. It shattered the belt buckle, or the, not the belt buckle, but the buckle that the like little leash clasp that connected us. And those things aren't easy to break. Like, I mean, this thing was not, you know, some Chinese steel. I mean, it was some high quality stuff that they had rigged up for us. And he got chucked 20 feet away from us, and I was still underneath. And then I could hear muffled voices. And then I see a familiar face, see Chuck asking me if I'm all right. And I'm like, not really, you know, like I can't move. My nod is hanging from my head. Like I had nods, you know, and they were on tethers, and it had broken the clasp. And so this thing was like slapping in my face. One of the tubes was, and I could hear Digo like trying to bite everybody. And if you go listen to Sean Ryan, Dom Rosso was just on there. Right. He talks about Digo trying to bite him, and he was trying to bite everybody that night. But he goes, hey, your dog's trying to bite everybody. And they got me uncovered, you know, my legs and everything uncovered. We didn't know they were broken at first. He says, hey, do you got a muzzle for your dog? And I was like, actually, yeah, I carry a muzzle with me on all my ops. So I had a hard muzzle, and then I had a soft muzzle, a little mesh muzzle. And I reached down in my left cargo pocket, and I realized that my left wrist was broken. So I still have a scar right there from it. There's a plate in there. But my left wrist was like hanging there, and it hurt really bad when I went to go shove it in my pocket. And so I like, fuck, that ain't good. So I reached over with my right hand and pulled out a muzzle and gave it to him. And then two more assaulters came over to me, and they're trying to get all this wire off of me. And they didn't know if it was like connected to a secondary device. So they're trying to figure that all out. And finally they get all of that off of me, and they go to lift me up by my arms. And I like, the most excruciating noise and scream that I could give out is the best way I could describe it. I could feel all my bones and my legs, two femurs, just fucking cracking. And they put me down instantly. And right then and there, that they realized, like, they saw my legs like shooting one way and then shooting another way. I actually had shattered my femurs in 5 places in one leg and then 7 places in another. So, yeah. So they sent me down, and they used up all the litters for everybody else. So they're trying to figure out how they're going to get me out of there at the time. And I could hear Digo still, and they're still trying to get Lewis out from underneath the part of the building that fell on him, you know. And they finally got him out, and they said, hey, this is going to hurt really bad. And I'm sitting there, you know, chomping down on these fentanyl lollipops. I think I killed like 4 or 5 of them at that time. And, you're not supposed to do that. Definitely not supposed to do that. But they pick me up. 4 people pick me up, 2 at the legs, 2 in the shoulders. And I'm just like, I'm in the worst pain of my life. And they get me over to the Striker, and they lay me right on Lewis. So Lewis had already passed, and I didn't know it at the time. I thought that they were just putting us in there together because we were the two that needed to be taken care of first. And it turns out we were. I looked over at the medic and I asked if he was gone, because I've only seen 2 guys get killed overseas at this point, you know. And once you see what they look like, you know, when they're gone, you can just tell. And I didn't want it to be, because Lewis was very helpful just in my coming to the squadron. He was an EOD guy, so all the assaulters treated him like an assaulter. I mean, he was a badass EOD guy. I mean, I would be willing to bet, you know, they considered him definitely one of them. I mean, he could outperform, you know, shooting and stuff like that, even with some of the best there. And, you know, he pulled me aside several times and just said, gave me advice on, you know, how to navigate, you know, the team room. He would show me different IEDs. He had set up some fake IEDs over there when we landed, and he walked the guys through them. But then he pulled me aside afterwards and kind of showed me where I would have issues with the dog, you know, getting too close to some of them, and how it could potentially hurt the dog. And so they laid me on top of him, and the next call was to drive us to an open field. And they would have these one. It was a 47 Chinook helicopter that was loaded with surgical staff. And so they called in the CASVAC. It landed. They put us on there, and then they started working on Louie. I blacked out I don't know, probably 3 or 4 or 5 times. I mean, I blacked out a lot. That night was fucking, it was gnarly. You know, when I got over there, I always thought, like, you know, getting shot and stuff like that, possibility could happen, but I never thought a building would blow up and, you know, change my life. It ended, you know, killed Louis. And so anyways, they flew us to Balad and they got us in the tent and I could hear Digo like trying to bite everybody still. He's flipping out. Digo lived, by the way. Digo ended up going to Mike Ritland's foundation and he ended up being living his life out on a Florida couch with a Kong. And eventually he ended there. But at the time I could hear him trying to bite everybody. And then I had a doctor come over to me and was like, has anybody straightened your legs yet before we put you in the MRI machine? And I was like, yeah, they look pretty straight to me. And he's like, no, you would know if somebody came over and did it to you. And so he called over to Corman or whatever they call the hospital people over there. I think they're army cats, but they said told them to lay down on top of me. So they fucking pulled my arms and laid down. And he went down to each leg and just fucking yanked as hard as he could. And then from that moment, they laid me in another bed. They said, hey, do you want to have a priest come pray over you? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Cause at this time I, you know, my dealings with God and all of that was just basically getting confirmed as a kid and being pretty much forced to go to church. So I knew what God was. I knew what church was, but I really don't know if I really knew it. You know what I mean? Like I understood it, but so at that point I was like, man, I need somebody to say something for me. And so he prayed over me and then they put the little mask on me and I passed out and I woke up with a fucking erector set on the outside of my legs. Like it's like these metal rods. So they basically screwed into each top and bottom of each femur. There's 2 screws in each one. I still have the holes that you can still see it. Like you can still see the marks. And I was like, this is not good. And I couldn't move my legs really. And my wrist was back in a makeshift cast. And that was that night.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't really stop to give you guys any time. Oh, anything. I apologize.
I don't know that I was expecting you to tell that story. And I do appreciate you telling that story. I know not everybody's stroll down memory lane is the same.
But if I can tell you about Louis Safran, if I can mention his name and I have to put up with not with feeling like shitty inside for a little while, and maybe somebody that's watching this goes to Google and types in Louis Safran and learns about his life or learns that he liked to free dive and maybe they like to free dive. Maybe people like to free dive, like, you know, and go do that where he's got a memorial headstone. Down in Miami, Florida. Like if it gets somebody just to go learn about him, it's worth it to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I would like to ask a follow-up question because, you know, you mentioned God. What's your walk with God now?
Let me tell you about our newest sponsor, Gold Coast Canine. Gold Coast 20-acre modern canine training facility is located in sunny Southern California and was established in 1991. Gold Coast owner Rodney Spicer was bitten by the Schutzen bug in the mid-80s, and by the year 2000, he tutored over 20 different dogs in a variety of working dog sports, from Schutzen to protection sports. This led him to eventually work with police dogs and began selling them to vendors. In the mid-90s, Gold Coast began selling dogs directly to police agencies. To date, Gold Coast supplies dogs to over 100 law enforcement agencies and provides training to 27 agencies for regularly scheduled maintenance training in both patrol and detection. Gold Coast has founded innovative canine courses such as canine stress inoculation, prior deployments, and reality-based detection training. They've also introduced biometrics in the selection and evaluation period in order to increase the likelihood of success. Gold Coast developed a covert detection program for the largest technology company in the world. They also provide detection services to entertainment theme parks, hotels, and special events. When you think Gold Coast Canine, think reliable, experienced, and innovative. Check out goldcoastcanine.com for more information on your next single or dual-purpose canine. Also, check out their course schedule, merchandise, home protectors, and additional services. Follow Gold Coast Canine on all social media platforms.
For 10% discount on merchandise, use the GCK910 discount code.
Man, I tell you what, for the first time in my life, I told my wife that I want to go get baptized again. And I get teared up thinking about it just because it's that important to me. I got baptized when I was 15. Like, my mom basically said, you know, you've never been baptized, you need to go get baptized. But I didn't understand what it meant. I was forced to go there, and I'm thankful that I was forced to go there, because at least I got the knowledge of who Jesus was and who, you know, that part. But I really did not know it. Like, in my heart, I didn't know it. You know, I did not accept it like you should. And so when I talk about the meeting Jesus, I believe Jesus sent. It's in the book. So it's in the book. It's I'm blacked out twice, and I somebody comes to me, and but once you read the book, once you read that story, and you're like, okay, like that, like, no shit, like I can't even. I got chills coming up on my arm. You can't see it right now, but my hair is standing up because it was that impactful for me, and it was only a few seconds. And you know, now just with my kids, and you know, Jacob was born 2 weeks after I got blown up. And for him to keep me around in his life, like, Jacob, you know, my daughter wouldn't be here right now, you know, because she's younger than Jacob. And, you know, so my walk with him now is much different. Mm. It's very much different. And, yeah, I guess that's the best way I can describe it, is I was forced to go when I was a kid, and I'm grateful they forced me to go. But I should say that. I have a Bible app on my phone. And if I don't open it up every morning, like, I know that there's something wrong in my life. And, like, I'm missing something. And it's that, like, it's, I love just, I mean, I'll get on the treadmill now, and I used to listen to rap music and all this not great music. I mean, and not even just rap, it could be rock music. I mean, shit, I talk about listening to, The Beautiful People, Marilyn Manson, going out on missions. Like, that's not Christian. but it got you in the mood to fucking go out there and do some shit. And, you know, but now I want to listen to my Bible while working out. And, like, I know that's not the most thing that gets somebody jacked to work out, but it just really makes me feel good.
Awesome. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for sharing. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So obviously multiple surgeries later, and you're certainly a whole person.
Yeah. I was fortunate in that. Yeah. Fortunate.
Yeah. Besides police dogs, Gold Coast Canine sells canine home protectors. Gold Coast Canine trains and develops top-tier home protection dogs that leverage their specialized security and protection training to keep their home and family safe. Each home protection dog is hand-selected and goes through a rigorous screening process prior to training to determine their natural physical and mental aptitudes. This in-depth evaluation ensures they have the ideal temperament and work ethic to create the perfect family companion and home protector. The canine home protectors are thoroughly trained in obedience, agility, barking on command, searching a residence for intruders, and searching, monitoring outdoor perimeters. The canine home protectors are sociable and vigilant. Their concierge service offers regularly scheduled maintenance training, annual refresher, home visits, veterinary care, and board and train while out of town. Gold Coast Canine Home Protector is also well socialized with other dogs, humans, and animals of other species to ensure they are extremely well balanced. You can think of the Gold Coast Canine Home Protectors as family companions with added abilities. Check out goldcoastcanine.com for a full list of training offerings. Also, follow Gold Coast Canine on all social media platforms. Remember to use the GCK910 discount code for 10% off Gold Coast Canine merchandise.
It took me 9 months from the time that I got hurt, and I redeployed 9 months later. So,
oh no.
Yeah, it took definitely a lot of determination. I have a rucksack that I still have to this day. It's got a 70 pound sandbag inside of it. And that's what I carried around for the next 6 months. I'd go on these 5 to 10 mile rucks, where I'd walk this plate carrier, or that's plate rucksack with this freaking, you know, sandbag in it, just to get my legs back to normal.
Awesome. Now, when you redeployed, did you go back with the dogs?
I went back. So Deagle was having issues over in Afghanistan with his new handler. And so I like weaseled my way into this. I don't know how I did it to this day. I think they knew I was bullshitting them, but they wanted to send another dog over to pay, to give to the handler and just sit Deagle basically. And I basically said, you know, I don't want to be a fucking courier. Like, let me work Breston. This is another dog from a different squadron that was proven. I'll work him. It'll give me a chance to get back out there. And so they bought it. But then I had to go get myself signed off from medical because I told them, they asked me if I was signed off and like good to go. And I said, yeah, I completely lied out through my teeth. And then I went to medical and I was like, hey, I need you guys to sign me off. And they're like, well, we got to take x-rays and we got to make sure that your surgeon's good with this. And I'm like, whatever, let's just do it. And so over the next couple of weeks, I got all that signed off. And my physical therapist, he knew where my body was at. Like, I mean, I was working with him day in and day out. And I mean, he knew that I was ready to go. So, I mean, yeah, I took a new dog over there and it was cool this time because this time we were paired with we had a Ranger element over there in Afghanistan. And they didn't know I wasn't a SEAL. And it's not like they didn't ask me if I was. And so I didn't tell them I wasn't. But every time I went out with those guys, they let me do whatever the hell I wanted to do. And it was fun. Like, you know, I could push my way up to the front, send the dog. I mean, it was a good time. And some great, great group of guys. And, you know, just, yeah, Rangers are definitely cool.
Nice.
Very cool.
Well, how many deployments did you do post incident?
I went to Afghanistan 3 more times. I went 9 months later. And then I went with Rex and Tego. That was the second one after that. And then I went with Brando. Brando was my last dog. And Brando was a dog that was a PH3. Is that that's a title, right?
Yeah.
PH? Yep. PH3. And I took him over there. And man, he was like the best of both worlds. He was a dog that you could have with all the guys. But then he was also a dog that, you know, he was a dog that you could turn it on. And he is the size of a horse. Wow. And and he saved me from killing myself. I mean, to be honest with you, I write about it in my book, but contemplated suicide when I was in Afghanistan, my third deployment. And it was, I had Extortion 1-7 go down over there and I lost a very good friend of mine, a little brother, felt like John Duandara. And then we lost all the guys and, you know, just a hard time, but I write about in my book, I looked over at the dog and realized, you know, as I had the MP7 pressed up at me, I decided that, you know, there's more worth living for. So it's just, again, you know, a dog, I never thought about a dog as a service dog or therapy aspect until that moment and then realized the importance of it. And, you know, now, I mean, you know, for veterans and stuff like that, I think it's extremely important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
So life today, obviously much different. You're in Texas. You've got a dog training business and another business as well that you might want to tell us about.
Yeah, sure. So I own Patriot Dog Training. It's a, you know, we train mostly pets. We do a couple protection dogs, but mainly pets, not really in the law enforcement world, even though like, I would be happy to go and just talk to police officers just because I think it's any help I can give, I would be happy to do, but mainly just pets. And, we're down in San Antonio, Texas. And then I also own I told you I can't sit still. So I own a tire and wheel franchise. It's called R&R Tire Express. It's clean and nice. It looks like a discount tire. It's the best way I could put it to somebody who hasn't seen one. And we have one out in Houston and we're going to try to do as many of those as we can out there, you know, to diversify a little bit. And I've always loved cars and dogs and whatnot. And so, you know, I enjoy like the custom wheels. I think it's just neat. And yeah.
So you also have 2 children that are active in sports.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure you've probably seen on my Facebook. I try to post stuff of them regularly. I have Jacob, who's my son who just turned 16 and he was born, like I said, 2 weeks after I was blown up. So My wife got to take care of a cripple and also got to take care of a newborn baby. And my daughter as well. They both are in track and football. And my daughter plays hockey. She plays travel hockey up in Dallas. And so we're pretty busy. But yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
All right. At one point, I had you looking for a car for me. It was, it was a fine car, but I ended up settling on a different model just because.
What'd you end up getting?
335 IS.
Okay. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I remember you asking me about that a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I mean, it's.
Absolutely.
It's very touching.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to have done it for you. And if I can do anything for you in the future, and absolutely.
Well, very good. If you would just stay on the line with us for a minute after we sign off.
Sure.
Yeah, any parting comments?
No, Rich? Just thank you so much. It's humbling to be able to sit here and talk to you, man. And we appreciate you taking the time to do it. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you.
All right. Wow. What a great episode that was, Howard.
I think so too. It was pretty heavy.
It's a lot of info to share, and I'm sure it's tough to go back down that road sometimes, but I really appreciate him sharing the story. And then more importantly, I really appreciate him sharing his faith with us, and more men need to do that. I know I need to do better at it myself.
For sure. For sure. Tonight is a repeat. It's a repeat because I just don't have that much of a selection, but it is my favorite. Absolutely. Without a doubt is my favorite. It's Stag Junior, or Stag as it's Stag. Called now.
It's delicious. Well, here's the hair of the dog that bit you, my friend. And to Benny.
Yes.
Thanks so much, you guys, for following along, supporting us, and listening to these wonderful conversations that Howard and I are just blessed to have each and every day. We'd like to thank and support all of our first responders, police, fire, EMS, and our military for once again holding the line, keeping us safe. Stay safe, brothers and sisters. We love you. God bless, and God bless America.